From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made, well, I guess I would say just over 10 years ago. Today is going to be a little uncomfortable for me because the powers that be have asked me to make today's episode of Connections about Connections, the first 10 years in this new era. And I arrived to WXXI with some radio experience, but all of it had been back in college when I was hosting an overnight show called The Rock Lobster on Ohio University Campus Radio. Yes, that was an homage to the B-52s. No, I was not doing long-form interviews or really anything worth hearing. I hope I played good music. Depends on your taste. So when I came to WXXI, I had a lot to learn. And I'm grateful to the entire Connections family, starting with the listeners, who made it easy right from day one. If I struggle with an interview, still Connections listeners tend to ask the better questions than I would. It's the smartest audience I have encountered. And today we're going to play some clips from some of the shows that stand out to me over 10 years, including a rather infamous one in which I admitted live on the air to a guest that I kind of regretted having them on. It wasn't my best moment, but when you do 500 hours a year, you're going to have bad moments. There's going to be some clips I think that I hope you might remember or stand out. There's a lot to kind of digest here. And today's WXXI special one-day membership campaign. Our budget year ends next week. They've given me a script to read on that, but I'm going to go off script for just a moment. I like to say that public radio is the best journalism funding model because I think it's true. But it doesn't mean it's easy. It's tough for everyone in journalism. And we're not exactly where I'd like us to be. I think we can do better. I don't know any journalist who isn't concerned about the future of their newsroom, wherever they are. I don't know any journalist who doesn't wonder what will happen in the next 5 or 10 years. So if you'll indulge us today, we want to hear from you in different ways. I would love to hear how Connections has impacted your community or your life. Even in public radio, local and regional talk shows are shrinking or disappearing. And I consider it an honor to be at the microphone for one of the countries. Meghan Mack will tell me if this is hyperbole, but it seems like it's one of the last remaining two-hour local and regional talk shows. And I do hope you will consider becoming a WXXI member if you are not already. I've got a couple folks in the studio today who are going to help pilot today's show. And one of them is the pilot of every show. It's producer Meghan Mack. Hi, on the microphone.
Hello.
Is this uncomfortable for you too?
It is. It's very uncomfortable.
The whole 2 hours.
But I'm happy to support you and the team and the show.
Kathy Reed is the vice president for development for WXXI. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for 10 wonderful years plus.
Can I bring up a name right off the bat and see if it rings a bell for you?
Okay.
Teresa Marie Feller.
Yes.
So when I started hosting Connections, you would hear, I call it the voice of God, Gene Fisher. Mm-hmm. Gene Fisher is the amazing voice you hear that, you know, Connections is sponsored by our members. It's like she came out of the womb with this amazing voice. That's Gene. And Gene's voice would say, you know, Connections is supported by our members and from a gift from the estate of Teresa Marie Feller. And,
yes.
I never knew Teresa Marie Feller, but I did know that Teresa Marie Feller obviously valued what Bob Smith and the talk show before me had done. And made a very, very generous contribution to keep us going into these last 10 years.
Yes.
Every single contribution matters, whether it's literally 10, 5 bucks a month, whatever, or a Teresa Marie Feller-sized gift. But I thought that was amazing. I'd never been in a place where someone earmarks a big, big gift for a talk show. That was amazing.
I know. Well, clearly, as you say, it was very, very important to her. She knew how important, as it was called then, 1370 Connection.
1370 Connection.
How important that was to the community. And she left other bequests to other organizations in the community, too, which was great. So she definitely understood that she could make an impact for generations, certainly for many years, that we were able to take advantage of her generosity and the generosity of other people who have left the station in their wills and as beneficiaries of their IRA or however they do it, in addition to, of course, membership that we are privileged to receive every day.
And Meghan Mack, so when I said one of the last remaining two-hour shows, I don't have a full list. We've tried to get it. I don't know if there's like a special list that exists. I know there are some two-hour talk shows. There's plenty of one-hour shows. Cleveland, Hartford, Buffalo. I mean, I could go down a list, but I don't think there's a whole lot of 2 hours left, is there?
No, there aren't. And in fact, I was at a conference, I think in 2019, and a few people came up to me and were asking questions about our show because they said the shows in their market had left or they only had one show remaining in the entire region or state. It was remarkable to hear how much had changed for them. And I just thought, we are so lucky here to have a two-hour show and to be doing it 5 days a week. It's a lot of work, as you know, but I think it's worth it. And I think the community has shown that they need a place for long-form dialogue. So I do think it has a lot of value.
A person wiser than me told me when I was getting this job, if it doesn't kill you, it'll be the most valuable thing you ever do. Hasn't killed me yet. Here we are in year 11. I don't know. I think it's going pretty well. And Kathy Reed, before we jump into some clips, in a moment we're going to play a clip from the very opening moments 10 plus years ago. See if listeners remember who our first guest was. And we are also going to have clips, some that are a little fun and embarrassing, some much more serious and emotional. But before we do that, how can people support our mission here today?
Well, you can do that by becoming a member, and that is the easiest way to do that is to go online at wxxi.org/give. There's many levels. You can choose a sustaining gift, a monthly gift. Today, since we're so close to our June 30th fiscal year end, we are hoping that current and new members can make one-time gifts, you know, because we need to close a bit of a budget gap. I will find out what that number is. I'm seeing a number, but I want to confirm that that is current, because we've been at this since this morning and have heard from terrific people. But if you've never been a member before, we do want you to know how important it is to have you giving whatever is right for you. If it's $10 a month or a one-time $120 gift, there are thank you gifts you can choose from. You can look at those online, and we'll talk about them throughout the morning. There's one extra special one.
We're doing a news cruise.
We're doing the Gilligan's Island theme, Rob.
We should, yeah, pull up the yeah.
We should add the Gilligan's Island theme.
Captained by Evan and Randy Gorbman, who's already getting a blue blazer.
License, and they're literally putting me in charge of a boat.
Well, the good news is it's put on by Cornhill Navigation, who will be navigating
for sure,
and running the boat. So it will be a conversation. We'll be learning about the history of the river, Genesee River, and different things about the community, but also, of course, news. And Megan will be joining us, and also our health reporter, Raquel Stephen. So it'll be great. And members of WXXI.
I just want to see Randy Gorbman in his captain's jacket.
His topsiders.
He's going to look great. All gifts at WXXI.org/give are matched today, Kathy?
They are. We have a very generous compilation of Leadership Circle donors who have put together $30,000 in match money for the day, and we have not gotten to that number yet by any stretch. And they include Kay Benjamin, who's a member of the Board of Trustees, as is Lori Halen. And her wife, Mary McCrank, is not on the Board of Trustees, but Lori is. Karen Wolf, a longtime member and volunteer. And Dee Molinari, who is a very longtime member and volunteer who lives out of state now, but still generously supports and listens. So perhaps she's listening right now.
I was so nervous when I started hosting this show. I was the most overscripted radio host anywhere. And sometimes people will ask, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how shows come together and how do you book it and you know, what goes into each show. There's not a single answer. Every single hour is different for obvious reasons. But I can tell you that it is always going to have one script, and that's the opening minute or so. We want to tell you a story, and we want to tell you why we think what we are about to talk about matters. So that's the part that is scripted. Beyond that, we try to be prepared with an outline. And if we are over-prepared but under-scripted, which is where I like to be now, I can have the sort of the mental facility to kind of move around on topics, you know, go through some notes, cite some data, etc. But early on, no, I was over-scripted. I had pages and pages of questions. I don't think I was a very good interviewer early on. I think I was a little overly addicted to the script because I just felt like, well, this has to get asked and this has to get asked. But what you really have to be is a great listener. The opening minute of the show we're going to listen to now. I hope I sound mostly the same, 10 years younger. And this is with the late Congresswoman Louise Slaughter. Our connection this hour was first made in 1954. A 25-year-old student at the University of Kentucky was writing her master's thesis on the subject of antibiotic resistance. Even in the 1950s, there were questions about whether Americans were being over-medicated or if the proliferation of effective medicine might eventually spawn a kind of backlash within our own bodies. That 25-year-old student went on to earn her master's in public health, and eventually, she went to Congress.
Today, nearly 60 years after that master's thesis, Congresswoman Louise Slaughter is more concerned than ever about antibiotic resistance, but now she's turned her attention to the farm. Or to be more specific, she's turned her attention to factory farming, where healthy animals are routinely pumped with drugs. And her concern is that those drugs remain in the food we eat, and she's concerned we're all at risk because of it. Congresswoman Slaughter is our guest for the hour, and that's just one of the many subjects we're going to discuss. Congresswoman Slaughter,
yes.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I'm really taken back somewhat by your introduction there. I will tell you that it wasn't until I got involved in this issue again that I remembered I had done my thesis on it.
You must have felt pretty prescient back then, yeah.
Antibiotics were fairly new, and it was being put. They were being put into toothpaste, mouthwash, everything else you could think of. It's sort of the way that you've been used on farms today. And people were dying of anaphylactic shock. And but you're certainly right. It is not let up. My concern is even graver today because we, I think, are on the verge of destroying what is one of the most life-saving and probably the most important addition to medical science in history, and that's the advent of the antibiotic.
I don't think there was a more recognizable voice in our local political scene than Louise Slaughter.
I was just thinking there are so many voices that will never leave my mind, and that is one of them.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
There's
yes.
one that you'll hear in the 1 o'clock hour that will never leave my mind. But, yeah, Louise was definitely one of a kind.
She was incredible.
We were fortunate to, you know, that she said yes, the first guest on the show. And one of the things that we try to do for listeners is bring you political elected leaders at length. And I think part and parcel to why we're asking you today to step up and support Connections and WXXI and the mission here with a membership pledge at WXXI.org/give is because it is easier and easier for elected leaders, for candidates, for politicians to decide they're not going to answer questions from anyone. And we've been told this privately a number of times, sometimes publicly, by some local and regional leaders in politics that, we've got different ways to reach people. We don't have to answer questions anymore. And that's true as far as it goes. I want to believe that there's a really important public role for journalism still. And part of that is you come here, nothing is off the table, and we're just going to talk for 51 minutes. And I think you can fake it for 3, 4, 5 minutes. You can repeat talking points and slogans. But I think no matter your politics, no matter your party, your ideology, I think people will see through you if there's not a lot of substance there when you've got to do it for 51 minutes. That's where I am on that.
I agree. I mean, I think the practiced stuff, you know, I have run out of it. Now I have to really think about what I have to say
without being critical
of any particular person. But yeah, I mean, it's a little nerve-wracking to be sort of on the spot, but I think people have to have a tough enough skin to be able to do that job, to be ready to answer questions for the people who vote for them or not, and the people who pay for them with their taxes. So it's about accountability, which I think you guys do a terrific job of putting out there for people.
In the last 10 days, Megan Mack, we've had 2 Republicans, 2 Democrats, and State Assembly join us for an hour talking about the recently passed budget and issues that they care about. They had very different views and a lot, but they come on for an hour. And they say yes, and they will take our questions. They take listener questions. That hasn't changed. And thankfully, it's still a pretty short list of people who will never come on. I mean, we're not going to mention any names. I don't think so. Maybe in our second hour. No, we probably shouldn't. But I don't think it's a very long list of people who won't come on, right?
No, it is. It is quite a short list, which we're happy that when invitations go out, they are generally accepted, and sometimes, you know, scheduling doesn't work out. We had Senator Kirsten Gillibrand on a couple weeks ago, and I know there was some frustration about not having her on the show live. That was just a scheduling issue that just didn't work in our favor, but she came on the show, and we had 32, I think, minutes with her, something along those lines. So irregardless of party, I think it's the conversation that matters, and I think the listeners, and we want to hear from you, listeners, we want to know why that matters to you. But I think having an opportunity to ask your questions, to have a conversation with a public leader, is something that is hard to find in this media landscape today.
Well, in a moment, we're going to listen to another clip that made pretty big news even outside of this building. In fact, it was the first clip that I can remember that every other local journalism outlet in our region called and said, we need that clip. Can we use that clip? I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Rob Braden, our engineer, will pull that for us. Eventually, I'm going to tell Rob to grab a mic, but I don't know, Rob. I don't know if I can trust you here. Don't get me in trouble these 2 hours.
Don't make me hit the dump button, Rob. it's a long run in there.
Grab it now, Rob Braden. Let people hear the other voice of God. It's Rob Braden.
Hello.
We've got a number of people in this building that if you could pour their voice into a bottle and pour it on pancakes, I mean, like, that's Rob's in that category.
Hey, can I say just one thing? When you were just starting out, when you're talking about that and you had to write every word of your script out, I started here almost exactly 8 years ago last week. And I don't know if Megan remembers with this little clipboard thing, I had to write out every single step. Not just like an outline, but like point at Evan, you know, that kind of like just every little thing. And I did it for like the first 2 years.
Well, of course, because you want to like make it part of memory, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden we were out of paper and I panicked and I had to do the show without anything. And now I can just, you know.
Turns out it was fine. Most of the time,
put my feet up and not, oh, we're doing the show now.
Most of the time, all we have to do is look at each other and we kind of know what's going on. That's an amazing thing that's developed over the years. And listeners, if you have any thoughts you want to share about the future of this program, where you want us to go, et cetera, connections@wxxi.org is our email, connections@wxxi.org. I'm going to give you a number to call, but there's kind of two numbers today. I'm going to give you both numbers. This is going to be, it's not going to be confusing. It'll be fine.
You could do it.
If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. No, if you're just tuning in, this is not like the last show. We're not announcing I'm leaving. In fact, we're announcing that I'm hopefully staying for another 10 years. But it's going to take a lot to make sure the WXXI and public radio is afloat. And so this is part of our one-year, end of our fiscal year campaign. One-day drive. It is a one-day drive for the end of the fiscal year. Just today. Today only. And we would love your support. So if you want to call with a pledge of support, not talk to me or Megan or Rob, but just to make a pledge of support, Kathy Reed.
Yes. In fact, pledges are already coming in. We've heard from Claire in Rochester. Thank you, Claire, so much. And a brand new member, Stephen, in Rochester. So thank you so much for going online at wxxi.org/give and making a gift in support of Connections.
If you want to call, can they do that as well, or should we just do the online?
Yes, they can call in Rochester, 454-6300. And outside of Rochester, 800-295-9994. So a website and two phone numbers, plus your two phone numbers and your email. We'll be very grateful if anyone can figure all that out. But we're so appreciative. The thank you gifts are there. The match is in place to match all gifts today up to $30,000. I don't know exactly where we are at that day, but or at right now. But there's room to grow. I'll just say that. So
very good.
Yes.
Kathy Reed is our Vice President for Development, producer Megan Mack, Rob Braden, the engineer, Gary Putup, who's behind the glass representing all of the many volunteers who do great work with us. It is a team of people. And we talked about interviews with political leaders. Well, Joe Arrigo was a retired New York State Assemblyman. He had served as a Republican from 2000 to 2010. And then in 2016, you might remember that the Assemblyman in his district, Bill Nojay, died by suicide after he learned that the FBI was investigating him. Arrigo was asked by local Republicans to run for the open seat, and he would win that seat, defeating Democrat Barbara Bayer. Arrigo would face corruption charges of his own in an alleged bribery scandal a couple years later, and he died in 2020 after suffering a fall and then dementia. On Connections in 2016, first Joe Arrigo told me that he had grown up in Rochester on Carter Street. He said he would not go back to his old neighborhood unless he had an armored car. I told him I would gladly take him, that I wasn't worried. He said, not without bulletproof windows. And it was the first indication that I thought he was getting his news from very narrow and extreme sources. I say this because, and I'm not trying to denigrate any one news outlet or people who don't live in cities, but if you live in the suburbs or rural areas, and all you see in the A block of the nightly news is a shooting or a stabbing, You think that you can't even go downtown without someone shooting at you. And of course, it's not true. But it was clear to me that Joe Arrigo had really kind of hardened in his views about cities and then about politics. So, and of course, the reality is that Joe Arrigo's old neighborhood isn't a zip code where crime is higher. But the vast majority of that crime is interpersonal. It's targeted crime. It's not a constant barrage of attacks on people passing through the area. He insisted it was the opposite, that random people were being shot at all the time. He would not go down there with me. And then we got to his views on President Obama, who was wrapping up 8 years in office at the time. Barbara Baer, the Democrat in that race, had said that African Americans are treated differently in this country than white people. I asked Joe Arrigo if he agreed that black people are treated differently. Here was his response.
I think they take that attitude because it's given to them. You know, I mean, when you hear the president's minister say, instead of God bless America, God damn America, let them feel the pain. Now you're bringing this back to slavery. And I was not part of that. My parents weren't part of it. You know, we lost a lot of people over that fight. But I think the president has done a disservice, and you know, I don't condone. And I hear the way he talks sometimes that just, yeah, they're telling the black people, get out there, kill them, kill the whites.
Of course, President Obama never instructed black Americans to kill white people. But Joe Arrigo's comments on that show made headlines across our region. Our former colleague, David Andreatta, who was at the Democrat and Chronicle at the time, went back to Joe Arrigo's neighborhood home and met the really nice family that lived there. And he wrote a piece called, Hey, Arrigo, You Can Go Home Again. There was coverage in just about every news outlet, and I wondered if that would sink his campaign. And instead, Joe Arrigo won easily that November. Donald Trump won that November. And, you know, we were several years into hosting the show, and I felt fundamentally that things had shifted. And I don't think I knew it at that day, at that time, but I really felt like this is not the same. As I mentioned, Joe Arrigo died several years later. He was under investigation for corruption and bribery, a bribery scandal of his own right, but that never got seen through because he passed away. So that was a clip. Got everybody's attention, and, you know, that happens. I mean, so what I want to explain to listeners a little bit here, and producer Megan Mack is here, is my goal in hosting this program, number one, first and foremost, is to make sure that whoever is on the show, people on the show, guests on the show, that their views are clear, that the listener has no confusion, no ambiguity about where someone stands on an issue, how they feel, what they would do if they're elected, that kind of thing. I think there are times where listeners want me to be the yell at that person guy, you know, tell them they're bad. And there's times where I can't help it. I find myself kind of aghast at a comment, or I feel like something is not factual. And you're going to hear that in a moment. There's another clip coming up here. And so I try to toe the line here, but I also trust the listeners. I trust the listeners to hear someone in their own full remarks and then decide, yeah, that makes sense to me. That's logical, or that's not logical, or that's abhorrent, or that's beautiful, whatever you decide. I try not to be the person to tell you how to feel about it. And we kind of talk about this a lot because we get a lot of feedback.
It's true. Yeah. We've discussed how your role is as the educated moderator. You are not the person who's supposed to be an expert on invasive species or, you know, economic policy. Your job is to moderate conversations and allow the experts to speak. Now, of course, there are views on this program that different people listening may disagree with, but your job, and I think you do it very well, is to allow them to share what they need to say or they want to say, and then let the listeners take what they want from that. And I think it's similar to what we say during election time. We don't tell you how to vote. We don't tell you how to think. We don't tell you what to do when you get to your polling place, but we want you to feel informed and educated about the issues. I think it's the same thing with the talk show every day. We're lining up, hey, here's some different perspectives. Take from it what you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And the feedback that's already come in is really, really lovely. And we're not just looking for affirmation. Maybe you don't like me. Charles doesn't like my taste in music. He wrote in to say that my like for the Beatles is the biggest flaw in the talk show. First of all, Charles is wrong. I will put a firm opinion down. He's wrong. But I also like, but I mean, the Beatles are not the top of my list. So if the Beatles, if you think they're the best of all time, you're also wrong.
Don't tell that to Beth Adams.
I know. I'm actually,
or Dave Kane.
No, I'm more of a Doobie Brothers, Michael McDonald era guy. Stevie Wonder, David Lee Roth, Van Halen.
Wow.
So I'm doing
quite
my best
gamut.
Here. But it turns out there is no right answer on this, Charles. It's okay to like the Beatles. Some of the feedback, and I'll read some feedback in a moment here. It's really lovely to hear from listeners, Kathy, and it means
it
a
is.
Lot to us. Every single pledge of support.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to read from some of the folks that have called in already. Jane from Geneseo, she's already a monthly sustainer and made it a special additional gift. Geneseo, the alma mater of Karen DeWitt, who I just want to squeeze in with everything we're talking about, is retiring tomorrow after 34 years of covering Albany for the New York State public radio stations. So you can give in honor of Evan's 10 years. You could also give in honor of Karen's 34 years. Coming to a close. We also heard from Carol in Rochester, who says, a longtime sustaining member making an additional gift today in support of Connections. Love Evan's show. Always insightful, fair, and interesting. I always appreciate that you listen and bring on differing points of view whenever possible. I find your interviews most helpful when trying to choose candidates for office. You get details that cannot be put on a mailer. Your COVID coverage in 2020 to 2021 was helpful, reassuring, and became an important part of my day. Thanks always. And that was from Carol.
Wonderful. Thank you, Carol. I've been saying this more lately, but I'll say it again before we get ready for our next clip, which is on the subject of vaccines, but it's not maybe what people are thinking here. I think there's going to be a little bit of a curveball here. Before I get to that, I do really feel strongly that it is not the job of this talk show to promise you that you will never be uncomfortable, that nothing that you hear will make you uncomfortable. And I do think that in recent years, we've become a little more prone to thinking that feeling uncomfortable is the same as being harmed. And I don't agree with that. In fact, I think it is vital that we do understand where people are coming from, how they form their decisions. I firmly believe in the inherent goodness of most people. I don't think people are going to bed at night thinking, ha, I'm bad, and I got away with it for another day. Just got away with being bad for another day, having bad views. I don't think so. I think people are going to bed thinking they're on the right side of history, that they're on the right side of being a good person, a community member, a voter, a family member. But there are lines, of course. You have to draw lines. And we've had to negotiate a lot of like figuring out where our own lines are. Megan and I talk about this all the time. What's too much? What is too far? And I'll give you an example, and you're going to hear this clip that kind of went off the rails. And here's an example. I have no problem talking about people with different views on something like vaccines. What I don't want to do is book somebody who's going to say obviously untrue things about anything. I'm vaccinated. My son's vaccinated. But if you don't want to be vaccinated, I'd like to hear why. That's okay. I don't want you to like make up stuff that's not real and then just do that for an hour. So so here's what happened on the subject of vaccines. In 2015, we had a conversation that to me looks like now the opening salvos of the COVID vaccines debate. I had no idea at the time, of course, that a pandemic was 5 years away. So I'll set the scene here. In 2015, three different states had removed religious exemptions as a reason that parents can refuse vaccines for their kids. We're talking about public schools here. Schools require kids to show up having been vaccinated against a number of diseases. But parents have been allowed to send unvaccinated children to school if they filed for a religious exemption. By 2015, three states said, uh-uh, you can't do that anymore. Those states were West Virginia, Mississippi, and California. Not three states we typically group together, but that's what was going on at the time. And here in New York State, Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz had proposed that we become the fourth state to say religious exemption is not okay for this. So I am always seeking to understand the range of views, and I didn't want to just put Jeffrey Dinowitz and then Jeff Weinberg, who is, I'm going to confuse Jeff's title, but he's an epidemiologist and he's brilliant, and he works at URMC. And I thought, you know, they're going to be important voices. I want to hear the voices that oppose this, but what's the substantive reason? Well, there was an attorney named Patricia Finn who represents families who go to court over this. And we talked on the phone the day before the show. And she told me, look, this is not about whether vaccines work or don't work. This is about the fact that on libertarian grounds, we believe that it should be the parents or the guardians, the families, choosing what goes in a kid's body, not a school, not the government. And I said, okay, like intellectually, I understand that. Doesn't matter if I agree or not. I think that deserves to be a voice on the show. She gets on the show, and it was a totally different case. She claimed vaccines don't work. She said polio was never real. She said the conditions associated with polio were actually caused entirely by pesticides, and the concept of polio was a big conspiracy invented by the government and Big Pharma. I was shocked that this was not the case she made to me over the phone the previous day. Felt like a bait and switch. She claimed that disease would have gone away entirely, all major diseases, with better sanitation, good hand washing, that no one needs any vaccines to protect against disease. So I almost didn't know what to say, and what I did say was not my best moment as the host of this show. I told her that I kind of regretted having her on. You're going to hear that in a clip in a moment. The epidemiologist on the show was similarly exasperated. Here's a clip from that 2015 episode with attorney Patricia Finn.
And I represent many, many faiths, and at the end of the day, you know, their beliefs are as valid as anyone else.
But they're not. You know, but hold on a second, Patricia. We can say people have a right to religion, but bad ideas are bad ideas, right? I mean, I think it's okay to say Dr. Weinberg and I might not have the exact same religious background, but if a decision we're making with religion at the core is potentially impacting health or not of children, then we can talk about whether the ideas work or not. And, you know, I have to admit, Patricia, I wanted to have you on the program to understand some of the legal aspect, the arguments that parents make when they say they don't want their kids vaccinated. But I'm not comfortable with the notion of anyone coming on this program and saying vaccines don't work. It is wrong. It's okay to say that it is wrong, and it's okay to say that vaccines have worked. I'm not saying every vaccine has worked exactly the same way, but hand washing and sanitation, better than ever. Definitely has had an impact. But the science is pretty clear on this. I don't think it's controversial anymore. I guess I'm just curious to know why you don't trust science in that way, Patricia.
Well, let's talk about the science, right? There were 5,000 parents that filed claims that their children had been injured by thimerosal and the vaccines. Their cases were all dismissed. They were dismissed based on research that the CDC has recently, or at least the scientists involved with the studies, have recently admitted was fraudulent. And according to the CDC's own scientists, that there was very clear evidence of a link between thimerosal and autism.
No,
and that's not correct.
That is wrong.
Am I going to be that is very clear.
No,
what
it's
Dr.
not.
Thompson said
it's not.
Can I just finish? You asked.
I guess you can finish, Patricia. I'm sort of regretting this conversation already, but go ahead.
It's funny you say that because I was sort of regretting agreeing to come on, because I certainly represent a growing number of Americans who are refusing Big Pharma's assault upon their children.
I will tell you that last comment she made is correct. It is a growing number of Americans who hold her position. And so wasn't my best moment, and I apologize later to listeners for that. Again, when you do 500 hours a year, you're going to have weak moments, bad moments. I just promise you that the conversation I had on the phone with her was so different than what I heard on the air when she said, you know, polio was never real and, you know, it didn't cause the disease. It was something else entirely. And, you know, it was pretty amazing. But but we all have weak moments. But that would have been a line I drew. Had she said to me on the phone, yes, polio was a conspiracy invented by Washington to give money to Big Pharma, I would not have booked her. If she wants to make the case that, hey, regardless of vaccines working or not, it should not be the choice of schools or the government, I want to talk about that. Yeah, absolutely. Like, let's talk about this. It may not be the view that Dr. Weinberg shared, but that's valid to have that viewpoint. That's just an example that sometimes it goes off the rails. Not too often, sometimes, though. We try to vet guests pretty well, Megan.
That's true. I was just going to say that's probably one of the very few examples of a bait and switch that made its way on the air. So when the show comes together and we can talk through the process, there are various ways that we're vetting guests. We're doing a lot of research. We're often doing pre-interviews, or our colleague Julie Williams will help us out with those. So we're talking to people ahead of putting them on the air, especially if they're brand new to the show. And that's one where I know you did, this was pre-me, but I know you did a lot of work on that, and she surprised you. So the term is called bait and switch. And unfortunately, sometimes that happens. I think I could count them on one hand since in the 9 years that I've been here that it's happened. And I think that's, you know, most people are honest and they want to do the right thing for themselves and for the show. But sometimes that happens. And then we have conversations about how do we draw lines. So we did learn something from that. I think that was good. Just from a production standpoint.
It's a live show. There's going to be sometimes things said that shock you, right?
That is live. It's live. Live media.
That's live radio. Dell and Canandaigua on the phone. Others on the phone and who've sent emails. We have to take this very short break, and then we'll come back and remind you why we're here. We're looking back at 10 years of connections here. I don't want to claim that it's the first 10 years of the talk show. Bob Smith, 25 years of building this as an institution, but I'm lucky enough to have been here for 10 years now. We're looking back at some standout clips. We're looking ahead. We're listening to listeners, and we hope we're convincing more of you to become members of WXXI. You can do that at WXXI.org/give. We'll get some of your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, fortunate to be joined by some of the regular voices you hear as guests on Connections. They're going to share their thoughts about why public radio matters so much, about why it is so important to have a local and regional talk show. That is, even in public radio, becoming much more rare these days, and we still got it. We look forward to next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dell in Canandaigua first on the phone. Hello, Dell.
Hey, Evan. How are you?
Good, sir.
Good. I just wanted to call in and say, you know, how much I've appreciated your show over the past couple of years. You know, I just wanted to, you know, quickly mention, I moved here in, you know, 2013. You know, my wife and I moved here. We had our, you know, she was pregnant with our first child. We had new jobs coming up. It was a pretty stressful time. I turned on the radio one day and during a lunch break, and I heard you talking actually with an old friend of mine, talking about a book she'd written. And I was just, you know, kind of immediately kind of just started listening to your show pretty regularly. I've enjoyed every minute of it. You know, even the, you know, like, you know, it depends on, you know, I'm sorry. I've just enjoyed every minute. You know, my, you know, whether it be, you know, a show about, you know, the theater area, you know, the, you know, the background there, or the, or, you know, bail and discovery reform, which, you know, honestly, we just don't hear enough about, in a very non, agenda form. So I've really enjoyed listening and honestly, you know, appearing, you know, as a guest speaker at the, you know, at the couple months ago was kind of one of the highlights of my career. So I just wanted to
say,
you got
to shoot higher,
Dell.
So you can shoot higher than this. I trust me.
Well, you know, it's that's what we do. But I just really wanted to say I really enjoyed your show, and I hope you keep doing it. You guys do great work.
We intend to. Dell, thank you. That is really, really lovely stuff. I think Dell's point there, you know, when he said enjoying every minute of it, I used to think, like, that's impossible. But then I thought, you know, a good conversationalist can make you interested in, like, I don't know, somebody's shoe or something like that, just about anything, if you are prepared and if the conversation is compelling. Dell, that is really, really kind, and I appreciate that. And we look forward to talking to you again, Dell. Thank you very much. Let me get Caleb in Pittsford. Hello, Caleb. Go ahead.
Hello, Evan. Congratulations on 10 years.
Thank you.
I have to say, back when Bob Smith announced his retirement, I used to love to listen to him because he was so curious and genuine and authentic and talked about what was important. And I thought, who could possibly fill his shoes? And then here comes you doing the exact same thing. Genuine, curious, authentic, talking about what matters to people in the community. And that's becoming more and more rare in media. So I just made a small donation with the hopes that you can keep doing this for however many more decades that we'll be blessed to listen to you.
Caleb, thank you. I mean, first of all, that is really, really kind. Bob Smith had sort of an endless curiosity. For me, the good news is, personally for me, I have no other skills. So this is a really, really good thing to be doing for me. You know, and Megan's heard me say that many times. This is a very fortunate, I think of myself as one of the more fortunate people who's ever lived. And to have this microphone is a tremendous responsibility. We talk about just how important this work is all the time. And that validation, Caleb, is very, very nice. We take it to heart. I don't take it just for me. It's the whole team of people here. You know, we've mentioned Megan and Rob and people like Julie Williams and the team of volunteers. You know, Gary's here today, and it's just wonderful. So thank you. It means a great deal, and we do intend to keep doing this for a long, long time. That is certainly the goal. It takes a community of supporters. And Kathy Reed, how can people do that?
Well, they can do that by going to wxxi.org/give. That's the quickest, easiest way to do it. You can do it from your phone. You can do it from your computer. You can do it if you're listening on the app, or if you're already listening on the WXXI news site, you can make your gift there. You can join Ellie in Fairport, who says that her gift was in addition to her donation as a sustaining member. So sustainers are stepping up today with additional gifts, which is lovely. She said, because I appreciate the quality journalism that WXXI provides our community, especially Connections, as well as the new FM news station. I used to not be able to get AM 1370 after sundown at my home, and this change has allowed me to access a clear signal anytime.
Thank you very much. It's wxxi.org/give to do that. Every contribution is matched today. This is just a one-day campaign, and wonderfully generous people who've been members for many years themselves have stepped up to match what you're going to give today. So thank you very much for doing that. Let's get to two more clips because we've got them, and they're very different. And I'm going to start with a clip from one of the really tough conversations we've ever had. Just a brief note here. If you ever hear me literally emotionally move to tears on the show, I think it's happened 3 times in 10 years. I try not to do that because then I worry that it makes it about me. But I don't handle it well when we're talking about kids who have died. And we had the opportunity to sit down with Jeremy Richman. He came to Rochester to promote his work raising awareness about the brain, how it functions, and how it can become prone to violence. That was literally Jeremy's line of work. And then his daughter, Aviel, was killed at Sandy Hook. And so that loss became the fuel for the foundation that he and his wife created. Aviel was 6 years old. Jeremy's job title at the time was neuropharmacologist, but after she died, he and his wife shifted their focus to preventing violence and building compassion through brain research and education. So he was in Rochester as a guest of St. John Fisher College. And I am so sorry to say that 2 years after this interview, Jeremy himself died by suicide. The grief of losing his daughter overwhelmed him. In this clip, you'll hear me reading Jeremy's own words about his daughter, Aviel. Then you'll hear both Jeremy and Mel Callan, a family nurse practitioner at Highland Family Medicine, who was helping facilitate Jeremy's visit. I do want to put human faces. Sometimes we talk about victims in just numerical form. Mm-hmm. And if I could read a little bit from this beautiful biography of Aviel Rose Richman from the Aviel Foundation website. If you know my, I won't read the whole
Please,
thing, but just, you know, I'm the parent of a 5.5-year-old and and reading about 6-year-old Aviel, it's just so beautiful. Aviel Rose Richman was born in San Diego, California on October 17, 2006 into a family of storytellers. With a Spitfire personality and a love of laughter, Aviel was rarely without a giant grin and often barefoot.
Like her parents, she loved stories and demanded them as she was falling asleep, taking a bath, riding in the car, and on every walk she took. She already understood that her life, her growing up, was going to be a series of stories. She loved Barbies as much as superheroes and would readily switch between fairy and pixie play to her superhero persona, Bombs Galore, all with her faithful sidekick, Superdog Max, of course. She had no problem transitioning from playing with her dolls to practicing archery in the yard, and was happy to go from a kung fu workout with Dad to a cooking lesson with Mom. Aviel loved music and would sing everything. When asked what she wanted to be when she grew up, Aviel... Whoa, I'm sorry, Jeremy.
No, never apologize for being human.
She would reply that she wanted to be... an artist, and a spy, own a fairy princess, and a writer. I'm sorry, I did not know it was going to hit me that way.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, appreciate it.
As parents, grandparents, nurses, we really appreciate that lovely story in memory of Aviel. That's why Jeremy and his wife do what they do.
And you know, Evan, two things that are really... poignant to point out, when Jennifer and I created this foundation, you know, what we can talk about why we went in this direction. Two things became really quickly evident. One was that it was a huge unmet need that nobody really thought of reframing the way that we picture violence as a disease that could be studied. But completely unrelated to that, and why I'm bringing this up now is that people would become overwhelmed with emotion and express the sentiment very commonly, I can't imagine. I can't imagine what you're going through. And while we certainly appreciate the sentiment, the irony is that when they're shedding a tear, when they're touching their forehead and bowing their head for a second, ironically, when they're saying, I can't imagine, they are imagining it. And the more we thought about it, the more we realized that it's the imagination that we need. It is that connection. It's allowing ourselves to be touched, to get emotional unapologetically.
That was Jeremy Richman in 2017. We lost Jeremy to suicide in 2019. And it's been a number of years. I don't know if that foundation is continuing that work. And the amount of tragedy that family has faced, I cannot imagine. He's saying, that's right. That's the impulse, is to say, I can't imagine. The request is that we imagine it and that we do something about it. So,
and those kids just graduated from that class. They just graduated from high school. I saw a story with some of them who graduated.
Unbelievable.
How many, 20 of their classmates weren't there?
Yeah. And I think listening back, the reason that hit me so hard was when I transitioned to reading the part about her future and knowing she wasn't going to get to do those things, that someone took that away from her. But we share that with listeners today because we are fortunate enough to have this platform, to have the Jeremy Richmans of the world want to talk about this and want to do it at length. Megan, you and I have worked in different places, and often these interviews are 3 to 5 minutes long. When you've got 51 minutes, it allows for a different kind of depth, doesn't it?
It does. Slowing down or just having the time, you move past the sound bites that we talked about earlier. I'm sure he's done or had done plenty of interviews where he was doing a very baseline look at what the foundation does and talking about Aviel. But coming on this program, he was able to have the space so listeners can get to know her as a person, to explore those emotions that you said. And I know he felt respected by that and how he was treated on the show, and I know listeners appreciated it as well. It's one of the conversations that we often think about when we're talking about moments on the show that kind of define the show and what it can be, what it should be. So just the time and the space that we have here in the studio, the energy that you create is something that is unmatched, I think, across media platforms in the country. And I know I'm biased because here I am sitting in the studio working on the show every day, but I do think that it's something special.
Well, don't worry, listeners. In our second hour today, we've got a much lighter clip that we'll share that will lighten things up a little bit. But Kathy Reed is with us, and Kathy is going to tell you in a moment, as the Vice President for Development for WXXI, how you can support what we're doing. And this is a one-day end of our fiscal year membership campaign.
Kathy. Right, right. So it's for us, it's almost New Year's. So, you know, we try to do what we can to make this past year, these past 12 months, really, really great and plan for a solid future. And you can help with that by either making an additional gift, renewing your current membership, or becoming a new member at wxxi.org/give and making your gift there. You can find out all about the thank you gifts, which is a limited number of people who can go on the news cruise, captained by Evan Dawson and Megan Mack and Randy Gordman, our news director, and Raquel Stephen, our health reporter, and it's going to be a blast. It's I should tell you, it's August 28th. It'll be in the evening, sunset cruise. We'll have refreshments, learn about the river. It will be not literally captained by anyone who works here. It will be
yeah, don't worry,
captained by actual captains from Cornhill Navigation, and we're grateful for that. That is at $10 a month, and we only have a handful of pairs of tickets. So if you'd like to make your gift at wxxi.org/give. You can join us.
I'm asking every Connections listener, if you can afford to be a member, to do that today at wxxi.org/give. Whatever number works for you. And I only ask you to do this, and we don't do this many days out of the year. I only ask you to do this because we are thinking about the future of what we're doing. We're looking back at 10 years, but we want decades to come. And this is a day to try to cement that future. Every contribution is matched. Thanks to generous other members who've stepped up. So thank you for going to wxxi.org/give. We've got a lot more to share as we look back 10 years and look ahead at the next 10, next hour on Connections.